Welcome back, Mark. This is the Bring the Wood podcast. It's your boy RK rocking with
JD.
We don't even care about the copyright. Send us a complaint. Send us a bill. I don't give a damn. I'm just in my happy place, man. We talked about this. I think you and I talked about this. If I'm gonna like quote us as to when we did it, but I think it was like week two or week three, and we talked about bringing Mark back, and how much of a fit that would be. And to be honest with you, sometimes we speak out of optimism. I don't know how much we believed that it was gonna happen, but we definitely knew it was a possibility. Correct?
I think back in August when he went to Houston, we thought about why would he go there with that loaded backfield already.
Yeah, you asked that question for sure.
And not come home when he had a chance to come reunite with his boy. And now, like, I honestly thought all season long, like, it's happening. Like, I had a feeling it was happening.
Well, of course it's happening. And it was a dumpster fire in Houston.
Yeah, for sure. So they're unloading, and we got the benefit of that deal. So I don't know what we gave up for him, but I think anything we gave up is
conditional,
worth it at this point.
Conditional fifth.
Oh, yeah?
Conditional fifth is the word on the street. Again, until we see it in paper, I don't know what to believe. But a conditional fifth to get a guy who's – before I got on with you, I was on with Ralph Marlboro. So we had a quick little chat, and we had this planned out where we were going to talk about the Saints game coming up against the Bucks. And it just turned into a Mark Ingram love fest. And we just talked about all the cool things that Mark brings back. So, like, I definitely want to talk about that with you. The schedule today is we're going to talk about Mark Ingram, obviously, first and foremost. We're going to talk about the free agents that we could bring in, that we could sign. We're going to talk about the additions that are coming back from suspension and from the IR, PUP, COVID list, etc. And then we're going to talk about the game. I want to talk about the Seattle game. I want to review a little bit of what happened in that Seattle game and some of my thoughts and hear some of yours. And then I really want to hear, like, I already have my ideas about the game against the Bucks that's coming up. I really want to hear your breakdown of what the game looks like to you and how we can win that game and move to within a half game of first place from the NFC South with that Giants bad loss that we had. So first thing is first, okay? Mark Ingram comes back. I don't know how much juice he has left, but he is 89 yards away from breaking Deuce McAllister's rushing record with the Saints. I don't think he gets that record against the Bucks because the Bucks are tough to run on. However, Khalil Herbert, who I don't think is better than Mark Ingram and or smarter than Mark Ingram, knows where to run and has a better offensive line than the Saints do, just ran for 100 yards on the Bucks in a losing effort. So is it possible that we can run on the Bucks? It is possible. It's not likely, but again, if Mark breaks one, can you imagine what that dome's going to sound like if Mark Ingram breaks like a 43-yard run for a touchdown?
Oh my gosh.
Like that place. That place will be ridiculous. But let me just
He's got to be the guy who leads the chant.
No. Right? No. That's DeMario. I don't know if you saw Seattle's game.
No. Yeah. Like the
Who Dat chant? Oh, okay. Yeah. It'd be nice to see him back. The one thing I wanted to see if you agreed with me on. I agree with myself. I'm crazy. I think Mark Ingram is the equivalent to Quan Alexander on the offense with the level of juice that he brings and the excitement that he brings and the joy that he brings to the sideline. He brings the sideline to life. Do you agree or disagree?
That is a perfect comparison. And I can't wait to see him dancing on the sideline again. You know he's going to be so happy to be back home. Like he loved his time in Baltimore. You can tell he really enjoyed his time in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like he's gonna come back and just like play with extra juice, man. Like he's gonna come back and he's gonna want to help this team win as badly as he can, obviously. And also just reuniting with AK on the sideline. Like when we see DeMario and Quan together,
yeah.
Like, that's the comparison is there for AK and Mark.
Yeah,
and
silent but deadly.
And listen, like this year he has what 70 carries for 295 yards.
92 carries for a couple hundred yards. Nothing crazy. He had one game where he had 80 plus yards, and then he had another game with like 70. And then obviously Houston's just the like they're an absolute dumpster fire and played from like right from way behind. There was a couple games where he had sub 8 carries. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like he didn't get the rock as much. The thing that I do want to speak to that's kind of a weird thought, but Jameis Winston's a black quarterback. Mark Ingram is a very big advocate for the Black Lives Matter movement and seeing his people do well. Mm-hmm. I think that that's going to be an aspect that people aren't going to talk about. They're not going to look at that as like a positive, but Mark's going to play a little bit, like, I don't want to say Mark's going to play a little bit harder than he would for, say, a white quarterback, whatever, but I do, mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit of extra juice in that, you know what I mean? Like, can you see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Like
He went to Baltimore and he had Lamar, and then he was hoping to go with Deshaun, right? So, that trend is there.
Yeah, so I think that when he went to Baltimore, did you not see him with a little bit more vocal than he was in New Orleans? Like, he was pretty vocal in New Orleans, but he wasn't like he was in Baltimore in the interviews, you know, big trust and all this other stuff that he was doing in the he did a lot of extra stuff, which I think lends itself to the fact that he's looking at a quarterback that looks like him. I don't know. There's just something about representation at that position I think will lend a different sense of energy for Mark Ingram. That's what I'm trying to get at. The second part is, Mark is like I saw him in Houston, even though how bad they were, he was taking on the big brother role. Did you notice that? Like, he was doing a lot of interviews talking like he was the old man and doing a lot of that stuff.
I don't want to watch a Houston like games or media or anything like that. So I'll take your word for that. But
yeah,
I can see him taking that on because Grizzle veteran, now he's what, 32 years old?
I don't know how old he is. I know he's up there, though.
And about that, if you begin to mature that way and want to become that for all the guys that you go play with, right?
Yeah.
So I could see that being the case.
So it's going to be interesting to see what his role in the game plan this week is even going to be. Like, I don't think for a second that Mark's going to come out here and be the answer. That's not what we're getting at. But could he be a guy? Like, do I trust Mark Ingram more than I trust Divine Azigbo or Ty Montgomery back there taking a carry? I do. And now, the thing that I really like is that on second and short or third and short, we don't have to put Jameis behind center and have him like almost get killed to get a yard. We don't have to bring Kamara in to take a thump from a nose tackle or two linebackers, you know, pressing the gap to try and knock his head off. We can put Mark in there. Mark is a savvy veteran, and he can find those spots and get that yard for us. You know what I mean? So that's an added element that's going to protect some of our guys, and that's a big thing. So another unspoken thing about it is that he's really good in the pass game before he left New Orleans. You remember how good he got in the pass game, like the screen game especially? That's going to make Jameis look better. So if he catches a couple screens a game and actually breaks one, that's going to make Jameis look better. And Sean Payton's screen game this year has been on point.
Yeah.
Like, I rewatched the Seattle game. Man, he had a bunch. And Jameis missed... If Throckmorton doesn't get blown up, Juwan Johnson scores a touchdown at the end of the game. Juwan Johnson walks in for a touchdown because it was a tight end delayed screen off the left side, and he was open. Yeah. Like, Sean's been calling up some unbelievable screens and some really good plays where you're pulling guards out into the flats and having them block downfield after the pass. Like, just some really creative things. So I think that's a good way to get Mark involved if he is going to be involved here in week one.
Agreed. And even the Troutman screen too there, right?
It was great. It was great. Troutman got a bad rap, and I think Mark Ingram actually makes Troutman's job easier. It's just another leader to kind of put his hands around Troutman, because there is no Malcolm Jenkins on the offensive side right now. You know what I mean? That can kind of put his hands around Troutman and be like, listen, young buck, you okay, just keep going. I think Troutman needs a friend.
Where's Jared Cook when you need him, eh?
No, forget Beetlejuice. I mean, like, a leader. Like, Troutman needs a friend right now that's going to help him. Like nobody came up to him after he fumbled that ball and, like, took him under their wing. You know what I mean? Like, that was... Yeah,
I heard he was getting some pats on the back from, like, Marshawn and stuff, though, I thought.
Oh, did he?
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Because I watched the game and I didn't see it. I saw him go back to the sideline and he was just kind of, you know, head down. He wouldn't look at Sean. You know, he was smart enough to keep his gaze away. Yeah.
Speaking of Ingram out of the backfield, just pulled up his stats from 2014 when he started catching the ball more until about 2018 when he left us. His reception count for those 5 years, 29, 50, 46, 58, and then 21.
Yeah. What year was that Cincinnati game? Do you remember that game where he caught that big long screen? Was that 2017? Yeah, it was 2017. I love that. That was such a good game.
Yeah, that was a great game for him.
So, we talked about Mark. You have any lasting points you want to talk about, Mark, before we move on?
No, man. I'm so excited to watch him play on Sunday. I can't wait.
What was it, Boom and Zoom? Yeah, love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Ski mask season. Okay, so we got Mark. We got Alvin Kamara. This week, we get back David Onyemata. Keyshawn Johnson went on a podcast and said he thinks that there's an outside chance that Mike Thomas plays this week. I don't believe it. Like, I'm not going to put any money on Michael Thomas playing this week. But we get Tre'Quan Smith in a redemption game of sorts playing back in the Dome. And let's be honest, this is the Dome opener. That Giants game was really weird. The crowd never got into the game. We were winning, you know, for the most of the game. So the crowd was kind of just like there hanging out being like, we're supposed to beat the winless Giants. And people didn't get excited until it was too late. And we ended up losing the game. So this is our home opener against the division leading Bucks. And for the first time in a long time, we're the underdogs in one of these games.
That's right.
So how you feeling about it? Like, how you feeling about David Onyemata coming back? Is there anybody else coming back this week that you're keeping an eye on that you think is going to help us? Do you think we make another trade? Like, what are your thoughts going into this week?
I think this game coming back for David Onyemata is a perfect game to come back to, because we need the interior pressure against Tom Brady. That's how he, you know, begins to make mistakes, if he makes mistakes. And Onyemata is sitting out for the past 6 weeks watching his team play well enough to be 4-2, but good enough to be 6-0 and not be in there. He's going to come in and he's going to have a monster day. I think he's going to come in with so much like tenacity, energy, and focus because he's been waiting to get this moment for so long, probably kicking himself at home or on the sidelines for, you know, taking 6 games off his career. And I think he's going to come back and he's going to be a wrecking ball. And I think that's going to also help generate, you know, opportunities for Davenport on the outside and for, you know, Cam to maybe get more chances at the right end or whatever he's playing now. And then who knows, like maybe the guys he's going to be spelling or taking snaps from right now will be fresher too when they come in and feeding off his energy, right? So like he provides so much to that D-line, and Sean commented on how good of shape he is in right now considering he's been out for 6 weeks. So and Sean doesn't comment that much on you know, that kind of stuff too often, but he made a point to talk about how good of shape Onyemata is in right now. So I don't know. I'm so pumped to see him come back too, man. It's gonna be an awesome game for him.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. There's an addition here of a guy that really is going to, the same way that Davenport mesmerized us on Monday night, by just pushing people around, and he added so much more to that to that D line. Like the D line just moved at a different pace. There's no surprise that Cam Jordan got his first sack when Davenport came back, because Seattle was like, oh my God, this guy's destroying the other side of the line. We have to put some attention over there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like right now you're just sitting here going, okay, now we add Davenport, who's healthy, who's wrecking one side of the line. And now you bring in, let's be honest, let's be unbiased, let's be objective. Is David Onyemata a top 3 or a top 5 interior defensive lineman in the NFL? Because I talk Vita Vey, I talk Aaron Donald, and then I can't think of anybody else. And maybe it's just because I don't know enough interior defensive linemen that are as skilled. But is he not up there?
He has to be for sure. Top five is probably being like...
Well, PFF has him as top 3. Last year, PFF had him as top 3 interior defensive lineman.
Yeah, no, I'm saying top 5 is probably being like, you know, cautiously optimistic, but top 3 is like definitely a possibility too, right? Like, and he's not recognized as that yet, unless you look deep into like the archives of PFF or whatever. But like the NFL, like casual fan has no idea who this guy is.
Breaking news. The Arizona Cardinals just lost J.J. Watt for the year.
Oh, I saw that, man.
Wow.
Yeah, that's big.
That changes the bulk of power. They have, after this Packers game, they have 3 layups, so they'll still be fine, but that's crazy for their chances for a Super Bowl. Better for us. Anyways, let's get back to David Onyemata. So David Onyemata added back, I think also, like you said, spells Tuttle, allows Tuttle to just kind of be fresh You know who's a shining star for me on this team right now, and no one really talks about him? Number 52, Montrevious Adams. I watched that game against Seattle. He played really good. Like, the limited snaps that he played really good. He reminds me of like an Anthony Hargrove type. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I have to go back and watch a game again, man. I just watched it on the first watch, so I'll have to check it out.
He was good. 52 was buzzing around the ball, and Shai Tuttle played well. And again, that was our best performance by the defensive line. And obviously, because DeMario Davis was a man possessed. Can we just talk about DeMario Davis for 1 minute here? Mm-hmm. I'll just step back because I know you got a love affair for linebackers. So just go on, please praise this man's name. Just talk about this man right here.
Okay, I don't know what he can't do. Like, he's in coverage, you know, pressuring the quarterback in any sort of blitzing situation, whatever it is, getting his hands on the ball when he has to, helping dudes up if they get hurt. I don't know, just like the man is, he's honestly a godlike figure on the football field, and there's nothing that I would not trust him to do. Like, you know, if he had to watch my kids for a week, I'd trust him to watch my kids for a week.
Oh yeah, for
anything
sure
that he could do. He's going to do it with such passion and intensity and love for whatever he does. Like, man, the guy is somebody who I aspire to, like, one day be at my job. Like, just love every minute of it and show up to show out. And no matter what he does, man, like, on the football field, off the football field, in the huddle, in the pregame, in the postgame press conferences, he's just, like, the like ultimate professional in all aspects of football.
Yeah.
And God, I can watch him play all day long. And I wish you could just watch your defense and just watch him play and get more snaps for them. But then that means we're, you know, not getting off the field. But man, the guy is easily a top three Saint for me.
He is, by leaps and bounds, one of the top three reasons the Saints have a winning record right now. Mm-hmm. Coaching is number one. Alvin Kamara is number two. And then the leader of that defense that gets that defense going, because we haven't been getting a lot of sacks, and a lot of the interceptions have been great plays that he's been a part of. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Pushing action to certain places or getting pressure on the quarterback. So he is definitely one of the most important Saints. Is he the best Saints free agent ever other than Drew Brees? Like, Drew Brees is number one. That will never be beaten. Drew is always going to be one. Is he number two?
Hands down, without a doubt. There's no argument there. Like, it's like.
Well, I have an argument for you, but you don't want to hear it.
I could not get the image out of my head of him left shouldering
the guard. Like, you put the guard right. The guard. Yeah, he put Fuller.
Knocked down Alex Collins.
Amazing. Oh, amazing.
And then the next play, uses his right shoulder to get in the backfield again. Like,
yeah. Man. So here's my argument. You ready? He who shall not be named maybe had the best defensive season of a New Orleans Saint. I don't think that year will ever be broken.
No, longevity-wise.
I get it, but I'm saying he won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Now he's getting Super Bowls in cell block 54.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had the best free agent season in the history of the Saints. I don't think there'll ever be a free agent that, listen, you'd have to score four times on defense to even tie him. Yeah. So
and get nine turnovers. Like,
yeah, nine turnovers. Yeah, like, just
how many people on defense in the history of the game have four touchdowns in a season?
I know Dion does. I think Dion has it twice. I would guess Ed Reed. I would guess Polamalu scored a bunch on fumbles.
I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, so we talked about all that there. The next thing I want to go into is free agents. So I want you to think long and hard, okay, before you answer the question. What free agents? You're allowed two free agents, okay? And they have to be realistic. Don't be like, oh, I want Allen Robinson and OBJ, okay? Like, that's not gonna work, because that doesn't work that way. I want you to think about two free agents that we could add to this roster and how they would help us. So,
give me a list.
The list that I got right now in my head is the one that I put on Twitter. I put a bunch of receivers out because even if we get Mike back, we need one more guy, one more Emmanuel Sanders type guy, one more, dare I say, Willie Snead type guy. Unfortunately, Willie Snead just signed in Carolina. They signed him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
So let me rewind for a second, just so you know. Mark Ingram is getting the number 22 jersey back. I just found that out. CeeDee Deuce is going to number 8 like Kobe Bryant, just so you know. Wow. And I think that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool little piece of nugget of information there for you. But going back to free agents. For myself, I think Brandon Cooks, another Houston depository. I think Brandon Cooks is the guy that we want to bring in. Now, his cap hit, I was just informed today, is only $2.5 million. So not only does he fit the scheme and what like of what we need, and is having a quiet good season, but he's not expensive. Like, if everybody says Allen Robinson, we have to pay Allen Robinson a lot of money. He's on the franchise tag. Like, he's going to cost us a lot of money.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Everybody wants OBJ. OBJ is expensive. So, no, we don't want those guys. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think we want to go after the smaller guys. And a guy that I really want to bring in is the guy that Chris Rozvoglu was talking about out in New York. I want Denzel Mims. Because every time I've seen Denzel Mims inside New York, like, make a play, he looks the part. So those are the two guys I want. I want Denzel Mims or Brandon Cooks. I had a Freudian slip there. I really want OBJ back. Or Brandon Cooks back in New Orleans at the wide receiver. And then I got another free agent later. What name of free agent that you want?
Well, I think the obvious selection is Brandon Cooks too. Like, just because, you know, scheme wise, he fits exactly what we need right now. He's reliable. You know, Adam Schefter called him a leader in the locker room at Houston. Mm. I didn't see that leadership from him in New Orleans when he was here.
Yeah.
But man, age makes maturity, right? So maybe, and I think just seeing his reaction to Mark getting traded today too, like, shows that he
cares
with the situation. He wants to be a part of a winning team. He wants good guys in his locker room, and I think he could be maybe like a changed man coming back to New Orleans, knowing that we have guys like Malcolm Jenkins who came back, who's respected in the league, DeMario Davis now respected around the league, and Cam Jordan who's still there. Like, the longevity and the comeback, and Kenny Stills came back. Like, and he sees this happening, and he knows that obviously it's something that's happening in New Orleans right now, where, you know, we're attracting former Saints, we're keeping on the leaders in the NFL, and the coaching structure has never changed in the past 15 years, including our offensive coordinator, which is crazy to me still. But I feel like if he sees all that, and he sees what he's living with in Houston or dealing with in Houston week in, week out, he's going to want to maybe make a comeback too. Mm-hmm. And the fit is
it's perfect.
Bar none. The best fit in the NFL for us.
It's
right
perfect.
Now.
It's perfect.
I don't like, I love the OBJ LSU connection. I love all of that, the Louisiana native and stuff, but I don't love the player right now. Like, the guy that he's become in Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not reliable, you know,
always injured.
That he can do. Yeah. Yeah, he's always injured. Nothing he can do, he can't get somewhere else, and the cost is going to be high. Obviously, the name value, the back of the jersey looks nice, but I think what we're trying to do right now doesn't involve him. And Denzel Mims, I don't watch enough Jets games to kind of like follow what this dude is doing, but I trust your word if that's a guy you think would fit.
Explosive catches with his hands, and looks like he's a little bit slipperier than most receivers. I don't know why he's in the doghouse there.
Well, then maybe that's another fit for us too. But and what is his cost? Do you know?
He's a rookie. He's on a rookie deal, so like he's in his second year, correct? Second or third year?
West Virginia? Is that West Virginia?
No, Mims was he played in the Big 12.
Oh, okay.
I want to say like Oklahoma State or something like that. It might have been Oklahoma. I'll find out for you right away. But
okay.
So that was my first. That's your first. Okay. What about this one? We need a tight end. Evan Ingram for the Giants or Mike Gesicki from the Dolphins? The Dolphins are going to tank. The Dolphins are going to tank, so they might as well.
He's having a big year, too. Gesicki's having a good year.
He's a big tight end.
Yeah, and he's athletic, and he can move, like, he can catch a ball at all ranges, too. Like,
yeah.
If we can get him, that would be, like, because I wanted him coming out of college already.
I really like, but I really, really, really like Evan Engram. I know he's oft injured, but man, can he play? Like, he's just a player. He's really good at football, man. Denzel Mims went to Baylor. He was a Baylor kid.
Oh, that's right,
Baylor. But yeah, I knew he was Big 12, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are my two guys. Do you have a second guy that you'd be interested in bringing in? It doesn't have to be offense. It could be any position.
Yeah, you know, I don't have the free agent list in front of me at this point.
Well, not a free agent. It's a guy we trade for. Sorry, I say free agent, but I meant somebody we would trade for. Like right now, I misworded that. Sorry, viewers, listeners. I misworded that. I should be better with my words since we're running a podcast here. I meant what free agents we could – I said it again. What guys we could trade for. You know what I mean? So obviously I'm talking about guys like Brandon Cooks is a guy that will end up being a free agent, so we would trade for him. That's kind of where my brain was going. So, yeah.
Off the top of my head, man, I
what position of need do you think we have?
I corner is always important. Linebacker could shore up something a bit, you know, have some more depth, although...
Quan, Caden, Pete, yeah, Pete Warner.
DeMario, I guess we're good there. I don't know. Like, I want to see Onyemata back. See how that changes their D line again. But Davenport came back and made a difference already. So D line looks nice. Do we need help on O line now?
Yes. That's what I was thinking.
Maybe O line. So.
So do we holler at Denver? Because Denver's got pretty decent O line.
Yeah, that might not be a bad play, and they're kind of falling apart quick too.
Mm-hmm.
I guess O line would be the play. Because now we're going to thrust Throckmorton into the left guard position.
Yeah.
For Pete. And then we have Hurst waiting in the wings if we need. Or
like, yeah, Hurst.
He can kind of play along the line, right? Like, he's going to play positional. So.
And we still have good old Will Clapp, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Revolving door, just waiting to get called back in.
I guess O-line would be the next position in need.
Yeah.
But. I just don't know. I don't know the O-line depth out there to know who's available. Or like what we'd have
to no. Again, but I just thought about that as we're talking. I'm like, that might be a place that we actually need somebody. But well, we'll see what happens. What are your odds that the Saints make a move for a trade here before the trade deadline, November 2nd?
Deadline's November 2nd.
Yeah.
So that's next Tuesday. I'd be curious to see how our game goes on Sunday. That's going to kind of help decide if we need to make a move or not, I think. If we can beat Tampa and beat them somewhat handily, like by more than a touchdown, I feel like the confidence in the locker room will be at an all-time high, and you don't really want to bring anybody else new in unless it's like a guy like Brandon Cooks.
Yeah.
But I think if we can, you know, withstand Tampa Bay's pass rush with the O-line we have, because they have probably a top 7 pass rush in the NFL right now, I think that if we can withstand their pressure and you know, attack their secondary like we can with time for Jameis, then I feel like that'll be a big confidence boost for the O-line. So
yeah.
But maybe Monday morning, make a quick move before practice week starts and hopefully find an O-line.
Yeah, as you just said all that, you know what came through my head is the fact that I don't think Sean is going to trade for anybody young. You made a great point. That locker room is so solid. I don't think he's going to be like, hey, let's bring someone young in here and then have to like deal with immaturity or have to put them in line or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Sean's going to be in the mindset of being like, let's go after a guy who's been in the league, who knows what's what. And if he's down, let's do this. If he's not, all right, we don't want you. The perfect guy for this roster, the perfect player for this roster, but they'll never trade him because they're winning. Tyler Boyd is that's the guy. There's no other question. Tyler Boyd is the guy. If we could pry Tim Patrick away from the Broncos, he's Tyler Boyd liked. You know what I mean? Like those are two guys that are sure-handed, catch across the middle. They're not afraid to they can run every route basically. Yeah. And they both got sneaky speed. Those are guys you can bring in, and those are guys that you can win with.
Is Tyler Boyd expendable in Cincinnati? Like, is...
Well, no, I don't. I think the fact that they're winning, they're not changing that up.
No,
they're tied at the top of the AFC North right now.
and the whole AFC too.
Yeah, so like they're not turning around and being like, let's trade one of our possession guys, especially with T. Higgins getting banged up all the time. No. Yeah. No, they're keeping that unit together. I don't think they're who knows. Okay, well, we talked free agents. We talked Mark Ingram. What did I say we're going to talk about? What else are we going to talk about?
Or review the Seattle game quick.
And we kind of talked about it. You know what? I was really upset, and this is just going to be a little bit of a rant here for me. I won't go long. I'm really upset at the fact that the officials let garbage happen right in front of them, and then they throw the flags on us. Like, I thought the game was pretty well officiated, minus the personal foul flags. Like, if Seattle wants to come out and they want to be hitting past the whistle, you know, through the echo of the whistle, I guess you can say, and then, like, they're yipping and yapping, and, like, why are we... The NFL came out and said that we're implementing this taunting rule, and they're making, you know, talk show radio 20 minutes a day where they're talking about this, you know what I mean? Because it's annoying everybody, and they're basically influencing the outcomes of these games by throwing these flags for people taunting. And then the taunting's happening on Monday night and you're watching it happen and guys are beaking and doing dumb crap and getting in guys' faces after the whistle, and you're not going to throw a flag, but then a guy retaliates finally and it's like you're waiting to throw the flag on him. I got really irritated with that. Like, I get it. DK wants to come out and pretend to be a tough guy and he really wants to get after Marshawn Lattimore because he thinks if I bully him, he'll back down. And Marshawn did a good job of standing his ground. But, like, at some point in time, there's got to be a review on this, being like, okay, let's look at this. If we're going to give this guy a personal foul, let's look at why it happened. Do you know what I mean? Because then it goes to both guys. But I just think that's ridiculous. Yeah, I just think it's ridiculous. We have them pinned on the one-yard line, and they get 15 yards because DK wants to go and hit Marshawn on the echo of the whistle, and Marshawn reacts back and pushes him back. It's not like he punched him or did, you know what I mean? He shoved him on the shoulder pad. How's that a 15-yard penalty?
And he barely moved him. And he barely moved him.
Well, DK is 40 pounds heavier than Marshawn. That's, I know, that's another.
That's what I'm saying. Like, DK pushed him hard, and not just once, but twice or three times throughout the game.
Yeah.
Off the line, and then and plus, yeah, they were getting at each other after the first play of the game too. Though they have had a despise for each other before the game even started. So
yeah.
And the fact that DK scored on Marshawn, well,
OPI for sure. Yeah.
And that, but then he shut him down, right? So to get 82 yards, you know, on your first catch of the game, and then not break 100, DK first. That's embarrassing for you too. That I saw that I was, you know, super interested enough to go back and watch the tape again was when we look at AK's stat line. He's got 10 catches for 128, but 118 are yak yards.
Mm-hmm.
Means that every catch he caught was a yard through the air, essentially, or behind the line of scrimmage, I guess. And like that goes to show how crazy Sean's screen game is that he's calling too.
Mm-hmm.
If you get 10 catches to your running back and he gets 118 out of 128 yak yards, the O line, the tight ends, the receivers, they're all doing their job at the exact same time, and that's why it's such a beautiful harmony, right? Like,
yeah,
man.
AK Texas route is one of my favorite routes he does. That Texas route is just 100%. It's just so, like he digs his foot in the ground and then gets to the middle of the field, and you already know it's gonna be like, oh, this could be special, because he's just gone. So I remember Reggie Bush ran that route quite a bit, especially in the red zone. He scored a touchdown on that Texas route against the San Francisco 49ers. I'll never forget that image in my head. I can see it clear as day. I love that route. So I didn't like the chirping. I really, really, really did like a couple of things I saw. One, I love the fact that Sean Payton jumped in the defensive huddle and basically told them, okay, enough. We're not taking any more personal fouls, and we didn't take another one after that. We played clean. In fact, Seattle ended up getting 2 15-yard penalties after that, which was, it just showed our discipline. It showed the fact that Sean has control of the team, and I like that. Because it is a young team, and we just went on from a Hall of Fame quarterback, and we should be losing this year. We should be. But we're continuing to win after we lost our Hall of Fame quarterback. So that means that Sean's doing a great job. The third thing that I want to talk about was the fact that we were able to get down the field when it mattered. We're able to get down the field in the 2-minute drill, and then we're able to get down the field for that last drive. And we would have had a touchdown, but there was just a little bit of a headache there with Jameis not being able to see Juwan Johnson for that screen game, for that screen pass for the touchdown. So I'm feeling good. I sigh, but I am feeling good about this roster, and I'm feeling good about the way that we were able to go into that rain and come out with a win. Anything else to add to that?
Just you speaking how we shouldn't be as good as we are without Drew. Like, look what happened to the Patriots and Tom Brady left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a well-coached team going into last year still. Well-coached team, lots of good. I know COVID kind of took away lots of the defense, but they fell apart entirely, right? They had a top mm-hmm. six or top 10 pick, whatever it was. And then this year, they still can't rebound, even with the guys that they didn't have last year back in action. So, you know, that goes to show that Sean has a system and the pieces in place that are obviously, you know, more, what's the word, I guess, more solid than the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Because we our Hall of Fame quarterback leaves, it's kind of just like, oh, we're back in action, you know, 4-2, should be 5-1. And we're rolling towards the NFC South lead in 2 weeks if we can win these next two. And the Patriots are kind of floundering, still not sure, don't know identity really. They can beat up on the Jets, and that's about it. And then, like, it just seems like Sean's confidence in himself and his coaching staff and his team is showing through this season. And Coach of the Year candidate has to be on his radar right now, right?
Well, yeah. If we go 14-3. Or God forbid 15-2 after that start, and we don't lose again for the rest of the year, or which I know is probably not likely, but if like we win double digits again, I think he's in the conversation. But let's move on from this, and let's just talk about this game coming, because this is the game. It's Halloween. We're getting excited. We got the Bucks coming in to the Superdome, homecoming. How's the game going to go, Justin? Tell me how the game's going. I want to sit back. Tell me a story. It's a nighttime story. You're putting me to bed here.
Nighttime story.
Yeah.
All right. So the Buccaneers roll into the Superdome. Mark Ingram leads a hoot at chant. Fans go crazy. We get first possession. We score on a screen pass to Alvin Kamara up the sideline. Mark Ingram and AK in the end zone dancing, doing their thing, back in action. It's 7-0. The crowd is going bonkers on the next possession that Tampa Bay has. And just like last year, we get a pick six, not from Janoris Jenkins, though. Not from Janoris Jenkins, buddy. It's from Paulson Adebo. Paulson Adebo picks off Tom Brady. The rook picks off the vet, and then it's 14-0. We roll into halftime. It's got to be like 20-7, maybe. And we come out of halftime, give them the ball back. We're back, you know, pin our ears back on defense. Now we're getting after him. Onyemata, sack, strip. Fumble, recovery at the 15-yard line, and we punch it in. Jameis hits Kenny Stills in the back of the end zone. It's now 27-7, and Tom Brady is starting to wonder if it's fourth down again. And all of a sudden, we look up at the score clock in the fourth quarter, and the score is 34-13, and AK breaks one more off for 64 yards, and the score is 41-13. Game over.
So I said, tell me a bedtime story. Now I'm sitting here shaking. I might go for a run. That's awesome. I can see a lot of that happening, and I swear you and I are the same person. I was going to say I think Paulson Adebo could do the Janoris Jenkins and be the guy to get a pick six for us in this game. Oh, so that's just amazing. In all honesty, I think that our defensive line getting pressure on Tom Brady and getting the ball out of his hands quickly is going to lend itself to us playing well defensively. If we can score 14 points in the first half and our defense continues to play at the same tempo that they played in that Seattle game, I really do think that we have a really good opportunity to walk out of that game like unscathed. You know, like we beat the Bucks clean at home just like we did last year and in both times in the regular season. Like, is it going to be 38-3? No, but I'll tell you this right now, 27-14 or 27-17, that's a game that I feel very comfortable about if that's a score finishing off that game. And if that's what we're dealing with, that puts me in a happy place, you know?
Yeah, my heart's pumping already. I got myself excited. Never mind talking to you about it. Now I'm fired up.
Okay, so you got your game. You got your score. You think 41-17, is that what you said?
Something like that. 41 to something in the tens.
Okay, so 41 to something in the tens. I'm going to say I'm going to say 30-17. That's my score. I think we get a couple field goals. I think the kid's going to get a field goal early, and it's going to get him in his confidence going. I think the fans will really galvanize behind him. My player of the game. There's nobody else to pick. You can pick whoever you want, but for me, offensively, my player of the game, Jameis Winston. This is the game. He's been listening to the national media for the better part of 1.5 months, telling him that they're waiting for him to make a Jameis quote-unquote play. Oh, he still throws the ball around. He's only thrown 3 picks, and he can't get no respect. Team's 4-2. Can't get no respect. I think Jameis Winston's a human being. I think Mark there is going to allow him to be a little bit freer because Mark adds some, you know, jovial behavior to the sidelines, and that's going to get Jameis going. Jameis likes to dance and have some fun. As long as he's prepared and he stays, you know, in his head as a quarterback and has some fun with it, I have a feeling Jameis is going to play better. So Jameis is my offensive MVP. Who's your offensive MVP?
Well, based on my story, I told it's got to be Alvin Kamara. Like, mm-hmm. I just think that the guy right now is playing at another level than he's played before. Is it the amount of carries he's getting, the amount of touches, his confidence is growing with each and every one? I don't know. But I feel like he's just playing at a... We can maybe say, if quarterback wasn't guaranteed to get MVP, we can say MVP-worthy season so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that continues on, especially at home. And I think in a divisional game with so much on the line, like, we either go down 3.5 games or we climb up to 1.5 games back of the division lead or half a game back. I think he's smart enough to know that this game is like, the biggest magnitude game of the season. It's a barometer for us. It lets us know how we match up to, you know, the unfortunate Super Bowl champions of last year. And I think with Mark back, he feels like Sean did that maybe a little bit for him too, you know, to not just bring in anybody. Like, we tried Lamar Miller on practice squad, but we brought in Mark Ingram to match up a good buddy with a good buddy. And listen, when besties play, and we never saw two guys have more fun than those two before. So I mm-hmm. think that's going to give him some more juice. And I think AK finishes off the game with 170 all-purpose, 2 touchdowns.
I love it. He hasn't played well. He hasn't played well in the past against the Bucks with regards to statistics. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. I hope you're right. Who's your defensive MVP?
Well, if Paulson Adebo, you know, rings true in the pick six, it's going to be Paulson Adebo. Like that alone will vault them up that category. But I think consistently, I think they're going to test as deep because I think Marshawn will you know, control Mike Evans like he always does, and I think they're going to take some deep shots. I know Antonio Brown's not playing probably because he's on a crutch, but I think Marcus Williams. If it's not Paulson Adebo getting a pickoff, Tom, it's going to be Marcus Williams getting one or two. So I think if he gets two, it's going to be him.
On my son's life, and you know how much I love my kid, I was going to say Marcus Williams. On my son's life. Awesome. You're my man. So I'm going to switch it up. I call an audible at the line here. Omaha. My defensive player of the game. It's easy. It's DeMario Davis. I just finished watching one of the best masterpieces by a linebacker on primetime, not name Ray Lewis or any of those guys that you want to vaunt as being the greatest of all time. And I'm not saying he's the greatest of all time, but I just watched one of those performances where that was an all-time great performance. Mm-hmm. When your linebacker throws a guard backwards into the running back and he makes the tackle using another human being who's 300 pounds, that is a masterful performance. When that linebacker gets sacks at the end of the game to ice it, that is masterful. When he's breaking down, knocking down passes, when he's doing all of that is masterful. So I'm going to go with DeMario Davis in the chess match against Tom Brady, remembering the awful taste that was in his mouth at the end of the year last year, walking out of the Superdome, knowing that Tom Brady was going on to the Super Bowl. I think that defense is going to be fired up. I don't mean a little bit. I'm fired up. Here's my prediction. We get 6 or more sacks in this game, and we have 2 turnovers. We get 2 turnovers and 6 sacks in this game by this defense. Count it. Go to Vegas. Make a bet. I don't care. Go on www. We don't have a sponsor. I'm not throwing any names out there. You figure it out. You know where you can put your $6 down and try and make $5.50. That's what's going to happen. I sound like I was selling a car, didn't I? Anyways, man, I'm just so excited. When the game is done, it's my son's birthday, so I'll be having fun with that one. Yeah, I'll be having fun with playing dad, and then I don't know. We'll see what kind of state I'm in for this game after that's all done. But we'll get back on here and we'll talk about it. Win or lose, the Saints are still going to have a record above 500 playing Atlanta the following week in the Superdome, where Mark Ingram is probably going to break Deuce McAllister's record. That's pretty cool. Anyways, my friend, this is always a pleasure. Anything you want to add before we get out of here?
Nothing, man. I'm excited. Let's get this game going. I can't wait. And sadly, it's on, you know, the timing for Halloween. Having kids at home makes it tough. So I'm going to be watching this game after the kids go to bed. So
yeah.
I'm gonna be off the grid until about 8:30 Central Time. And then hopefully when the kids go to bed, I can turn it on and sit back, enjoy it, and hope that it's in a good night's sleep after that. So
yeah, and seeing Marcus Davenport play so well last week makes me not miss Trey Henderson so much. Going forward. So at least I'll get a little bit more sleep there. I've been crushing on Trey Henderson and the Bengals right now, watching how well they're playing. Interesting fact before we get out of here: do you know that they're the only team in the NFL not to allow a team to score 25 points on them in any game this year?
Wow.
I know. I would have never thought that. I would have never thought that, but they're doing well. Anyways, our Saints. It's the Eli Apple effect. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right, my man. People that are out there listening to this, life is gravy. Life is gold. You got your health. You got your happiness. You got your Saints. We're 4-2, about to be 5-2, half game back of the NFC South Division lead. Man, I'm going to just hit you with a who dat, and I'm out of here. Who dat?
Who dat, buddy?